Hi, my name is Kristen Walters, and I work with Illinois Newsroom, which is a collaborative of public media stations that works with WUIS, NPR Illinois. So I'm here to introduce this amazing panel. But first, I just want to tell you about what is in front of you and then also why we're having this event. We talked to a lot of young people and people of all ages about what kind of their least favorite part about voting was. And we realized that a lot of people, when they go see their ballot on election day, they get a little stressed because they're like, oh, I thought I was just voting for the governor or the president, and they didn't really realize everything that's on the ballot. So we wanted to take away that kind of surprise experience and make sure that every single race on your ballot, when you looked at it, you were like, I know that name, there are no surprises, and I know what those candidates stand for. So that's why we're here. You will probably notice that your sheets don't have judicial or county board races. That's because most of all of the judicial races in the county are uncontested, or in those districts are uncontested, and many of the county board seats are uncontested. But if you want more information about your county board seat that might be contested, you can go to the SJR. And then also, we're going to be doing many rounds of Q&A after each section. But if we don't get to a question that you have, it could be a really general question about the midterm elections, I really want to encourage you to write it on the comment card you have and submit it at the end, because we will do follow-up reporting. We will try to answer your questions. We'll email them to you. So, without further ado, I'm going to get to the fun part. Mary Hansen is here. We have Daisy Contreras here and Bernie Schoenberg from the SJR. Daisy, Mary from NPR Illinois. They're going to lead you down your ballot and answer all your questions.
We're going to start with the congressional races. So you guys already know which district you're in. We're going to start with the 13th race. Bernie, we've seen kind of a lot of national attention for the 13th congressional race. That's incumbent Republican Congressman Rodney Davis, and he's being challenged by Democrat Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan. Why has there been kind of so much attention on that race?
Well, as everybody knows, this is a year that it's first midterm for President Trump. People seem to notice him, and people seem to care who's in charge of the House, and there is a lot of Democratic activism, as in the Women's March the day after the inauguration of President Trump. Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan kind of fits into that mold. There's a lot of activists in Springfield who really like her. And so it's one of the races where I believe the number is, if 23 seats in the U.S. House flip, then Democrats could take control. Obviously, President Trump is on the stump going all kinds of places, including Murfreesboro next weekend for Mike Bost in Southern Illinois. Mike Pence, the vice president, was in Springfield in the 18th district, but close to the 13th just about a week ago for Rodney Davis. So it's just a critical race, and it turns out Rodney Davis, the 13th congressional district, was drawn really to be about 50-50. I mean, Democrats did control the map this time around. You know, they made some concessions. John Shimkus's new district, he used Springfield under the old map before the census in 2010, had three congressional districts. Now it has two. John Shimkus was given a very, like, there's a very safe, very Republican district down south. The 18th, we'll talk about in a minute, is a very Republican district. The 13th really can go both ways. It draws in areas of Decatur over to the east side of Springfield and into downtown Springfield. It includes college campuses in, I think, Champaign and Bloomington Normal and down south to Edwardsville. So you've got a lot of potential Democratic voters, young voters at schools. And there was a very close race the first year of this new district in 2012. And Rodney Davis, who for 16 years had been a aide to John Shimkus, and then Tim Johnson was the congressman who represented the district, was from Urbana, was expected to run again. He was a former state rep. He'd been in Congress forever. And he decided, after getting through the primary, to drop out. And somehow Rodney Davis was able to get enough county chairman on his side, so they appointed him to the ballot. He ran against a guy named David Gill that year, who is a doctor, a medical doctor from Bloomington. And David Gill was perhaps a little ahead of his time. He's been like doctors for single-payer health care for 25 years. So he was kind of on the very liberal side of what any district in central Illinois would stand. And there was another guy named John something who was from southern Illinois, who was an independent, who, as Dr. Gill would tell you, he took my votes and got more than 7.5% of the vote. That race ended up being, Rodney Davis won only by about 1,000 votes out of like almost 200,000 cast. So it was very close. It was within a percentage point, and Rodney Davis squeaked through. But then he really solidified his place in 2000, let's see, that was 12. In 2014, the Democrats thought they had a great candidate in Ann Callis. She stepped down from being a judge in the Metro East area. She turned out truly not to be great on her feet. Congressional issues are really different from running a courtroom, apparently. And it was just, and Rodney Davis, having been a staffer for congressman for 16 years and being in Congress for a couple, very good with issues and could run some very hard-hitting ads and did. So anyway, it made an easy race at that.
I didn't mean to yell there.
Oh, that's okay. Am I getting close?
Yep. So it's interesting you mentioned that in his first congressional run, that healthcare was a big issue, because that's, again, been a big issue in this race, particularly for Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan. She's made it kind of a central theme of her campaign, as we've seen Democrats do around the country for these races. There's a debate last week where there were a bunch of questions about this. Daisy, where do these two candidates differ on their approach to healthcare?
Yeah, so a lot of things are up in the air right now if the Affordable Care Act is repealed and replaced with what's known as the American Health Care Act. So Democratic candidate Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan says she believes protections for people with pre-existing conditions could be weakened if the switch is made. But Republican candidate Rodney Davis, he has been saying and maintained that repealing the Affordable Care Act and replacing it with the American Health Care Act would not change anything for people with pre-existing conditions. But the latest GOP bill to overhaul the ACA does allow insurers and gives them the option to kind of waive certain protections, as well as allow some rate hikes for people with pre-existing conditions that potentially many people would not be able to afford. Londrigan has also said she supports what's known as a public Medicare option that would help drive down costs for a lot of people. But Rodney has said that this is not going to be doable, that it would break the system because we would not be able to maintain it in the long run.
And so there's been a lot of ads about this. Bernie, I know you track the ads and things. What can you tell us about those?
Rodney, it's really interesting. Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan said she got into this race because her son Jack, when he was 12, they were hiking at a state park. He got bitten by a tick. He caught Rocky Mountain spotted fever, and he was in intensive care for like 21 days and had last rites read to him twice. We have seen pictures of the son in the hospital in her ads. And so she said, when I saw Rodney Davis join other Republicans on the White House in the Rose Garden or whatever with the president celebrating that the Republicans passed the House plan, the one that Daisy just mentioned, that would have repealed and replaced Obamacare, she said, I have to run against him. Rodney Davis, even in past elections, has talked about the fact that his wife is a cancer survivor and she got great care because they had a flexible insurance system. He did often say Obamacare was bad because it made premiums spike in cost. And he said, what we need is a replacement. In this Republican plan that passed, there was also more than $100 billion to provide states money to help create insurance pools for people with pre-existing conditions. So the idea is, he says, our plan had many layers of protections, whereas Democrats say, no, different states could let this fall through. And while the Republican plan says we must you must cover people with pre-existing conditions, it doesn't say you have to limit their premiums. And under the Obamacare, older folks could pay as much as three times as younger folks for their insurance. But under the Republican plan, it goes to five times. And so that's why the Democrats are advertising or using AARP, saying that's an age tax, because it could cost those folks more. So Rodney's wife has actually been in ads for him. So both of them are using their families to say, I'm the real one for health care. And people have to kind of figure this out, and it's really complicated.
Yeah, it sounds complicated. Maybe we'll have some questions about that. But let's move on briefly to the 18th. A few of you said you're voting in that race where, as you mentioned, Democrat Junius Rodriguez is taking on Republican incumbent Darren LaHood. The two candidates, they had a debate last night at the SJR, actually. And they talked a lot about the tax cut. What was that discussion like, Bernie?
Yeah, and this is also very similar to what happens in the 13th, because the Republicans, including Rodney Davis, and then in the 18th, Darren LaHood, who voted for the tax cut plan, say this is putting more than $2,000 in the pockets of middle-class families in our district. That's not, you know, chicken feed. This is good. Nancy Pelosi may say it's nothing, but we say it's great. And the Democrats say this is a giveaway because so much of it goes to corporations and very high earners, the top 1% or whatever. And there are, I guess, differing views on how much of it, but, you know, you hear in the 80% range. So that is also what's happening in the 18th. Darren LaHood is stressing the economy, is saying that he doesn't like tariffs, but the new trade deal that the president has achieved is good for the farmers in his district. And the farmers, as Rodney Davis says about the 13th, they trust the president to get the better trade deals that he's talked about, and so they're working in that direction. Junius Rodriguez is running his second time. He ran 2 years ago as well. He's a history professor at Eureka College. Claims that he is, you know, moderate in some ways. In fact, I think he helped push for a Ronald Reagan garden or something at Eureka College, because I actually, when I was with the Bloomington Pantograph, covered Ronald Reagan introducing this strategic arms, whatever they were called, the START talks in the early 1980s at Eureka College. Anyway, Rodriguez says that this is a giveaway to the rich. And the tax plan is not good for regular people, and people still have to get two and three jobs to get by. And you may say the economy is so great, Darren LaHood, but it's not. And so they have that difference. And there's also a difference in both of these races, although Rodriguez, for example, was talking about what's happening on with Saudi Arabia and Mr. Khashoggi, who has just killed the journalist who was a dissident, a Saudi person. And LaHood said, let's wait and see what happens. It's a terrible thing. But Rodriguez talks about, you know, we need moral leadership, and we can't just talk about arms sales. So he was more critical of President Trump than was Darren LaHood in a case like that. So you've got and he also, of course, does say that the health care issue is a big one. And they disagree, just like in the 13th, on if pre-existing conditions are covered or not by the Republican plan.
And so, as you mentioned, Rodriguez lost last time, and it's a pretty Republican district. He seems to have kind of an uphill battle. What would it take for him to win this, or is Darren LaHood pretty safe?
Yeah, and Rodriguez was saying that last night. You know, the pundits may think, am I a pundit? The pundits may think, and I haven't said that kind of thing. I haven't done any predictions. I don't do that until the weekend before the election. It's a tradition at our paper for the columnist. But money is not flowing into the 18th like it is the 13th. Nobody thinks it's going to be close. I can't remember exactly what the percentage was that Rodriguez got last time, but it wasn't enough to scare Darren LaHood. But, you know, everybody's got to run, but you haven't seen the kind of advertising. In the 13th, you've got Paul Ryan's Super PAC, the Congressional Leadership Fund that recently said they put $1 million in for ads for Rodney Davis, and Emily's List, which promotes pro-choice women, it has put more than $1 million into the campaign for Betsy Dirksen Lonergan doing outside ads, as well as the DCCC, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. You're seeing nothing like that in the 18th, because it seems like it's such a Republican district that a blue wave, which may be diminishing in recent days, is not going to happen. So Rodriguez was saying, have hope and see where it's going. But and LaHood is obviously campaigning hard, but it's not the same thing.
Yeah, we're seeing more support from both sides coming from the national level in the 13th district than we are in the 18th district. So we'll take our first kind of pause and see if there are any questions about the congressional races. Kristen has the microphone over there, so if you have a question, just wave a hand and we'll see if we can answer it.
Okay. Have any of the candidates stated an opinion on the two changes that were just talked about on NPR today in terms of the health care program as it currently stands? I do believe the first was that employers now have the option to divert funds, and the second being that the coverage policies had changed such that the ACA's minimum coverage level requirements were no longer upheld.
As far as I know, Paul Ryan, who is doing a tour of 12 states for 25 candidates in swing districts, was supposed to be in Edwardsville today, and Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan was supposed to be talking at a press conference there about Social Security and Medicare, so you are catching me off guard with that new information, and I was writing about the governor's really weird and interesting new ad that he put out today about the marriage of Mike Madigan and J.B. Pritzker. And the clergyman who said a bad word that was bleeped out in the ad, if anybody heard about this.
But you could tell exactly what that bleeped out word was.
Yes, we're not going to do that here. But anyway, yes, no. you could see what the man said, and it does cross an interesting barrier. So I'm sorry, I don't have information on any reaction to that at this point, because the candidates were, I think, busy in the southern part of the district and the 13th, and I haven't heard anything from the 18th candidates today.
If you put that question on your question card, we can collect that and follow up with you, though, as we get more information from the candidates.
So during the debate in Urbana on Thursday night, a question came up about climate. So Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan and Rodney Davis were asked, do you believe that climate change is real? And if so, you know, what are your plans to, what kind of legislation would you try to push through to curb that? Do you know kind of what their reaction was?
Yeah, so actually both the candidates said climate change is real, which sometimes for the Republicans is interesting. But Rodney Davis talked about the power plants and the nuclear power plant that's in Clinton and some of the coal-fired power plants that are here in central Illinois and the need to support those. And he talked about kind of having that all of the above approach. So supporting nuclear energy, coal-fired power plants, and then also renewable energy. So making sure that that's like affordable. Whereas Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan kind of emphasized the need for clean air and clean water and tightening some of the restrictions that the Trump administration has been rolling back after the Clean Power Plan was repealed. So pretty standard split between Democrats and Republicans.
I hope this is the right time to ask a question about where they stand on education, Betsy and Rodney. Is this okay to ask? And if, for fair disclosure, I'm going to tell you I'm a public school teacher, and I'm aware that Betsy sends her kids to private school.
Sure. Do you know anything about
it? It's obviously education and education funding is a big issue at the state level. And I don't recall a particular review of what they think about Betsy DeVos and new policies exactly. So I can't answer particularly. I can, you know, guess emphasis, but that would be guessing.
At least for the Illinois News, you might have to go back and check, but I know that we did a piece on student loans and where some of the candidates stood on you know, kind of easing the student loan debt crisis. That is also on the iovotes2018.org. It should be right under the congressional candidates. They went through and asked, you know, where the different candidates stand on different pieces of legislation that would help students.
And I think the candidates are still going to debate in the next few weeks, or at least in the next few days. There are still,
I think,
maybe
there's one more.
One more in Bloomington, Normal.
Okay, October 29th, next debate. Okay, so we'll move on to the statewide races, another one of the very exciting races. So top ticket race, we have J.B. Pritzker, the Democrat, taking on incumbent Governor Bruce Rauner. Daisy, what's your take on kind of where this race stands?
Well, at this point, it's really a little bit difficult to tell exactly where it's going. It's so far, if any of you have been following any of the debates, any of the issues out there, it's all about the money that's been spent on this race. Records are being set on both sides. We have two very wealthy men running for this job, and a lot of finger pointing on, you know, you're a criminal, no, you're a criminal, and we have to investigate you. And there really hasn't been a lot of talk on, you know, specifics on the issues. When both of them are asked, you know, can you give us more examples on how we're going to tackle issues on pension reform or on higher ed, they'll give a very general answer to all of these, and they really don't give us where the money's going to come from to cover any, you know, the fiscal issues and to solve the fiscal issues that the state is currently in. So it's, polls are showing that that J.B. Pritzker is leading the race, but I think, I don't know, Bernie, weigh in on, you know, what do you expect will happen?
Well, there's obviously been late developments, and we'll see where they go. There's Pritzker has been saying, I want to spend on various things, and of course, efficiently, but he wants a progressive income tax. Of course, that would take a constitutional amendment, because their 1970 Constitution says there has to be a flat income tax, so everybody at every income level pays the same. Pritzker says people like Bruce Rauner and me, the rich guys, should pay more, just like in the federal system, and like in, I guess it's more than 30 states have graduated income tax. The problem is, to get that done, you need a constitutional amendment that has to be approved by voters, so it's going to be at least a couple of years before that could be done if everything goes smoothly. And then what do you do in the meantime to, you know, keep the state solvent? Whereas Governor Rauner says they only passed the budget after the two-year impasse, which raised the income tax back up to 4.95%. It had been 5 under Pat Quinn. That was a temporary tax increase. It went down to 3.75. That blew about a $4 to $5 billion hole in the budget each year. Governor was holding, you know, the state backlog of unpaid bills rose from about $6 billion when the governor took over to $16 billion during the impasse. Then they finally, more than a dozen Republicans joined Democrats to pass the budget. The governor vetoed it. They overrode him, and that's where the state is kind of solvent. It included borrowing. They borrowed like $6 billion to pay off some of the bills. The governor says the tax should continue to come down, and economic development, in his way that he's been trying through his turnaround agenda and giving more flexibility to local governments, like less collective bargaining things, which Democrats are probably not going to do, would be a way to fill the state's coffers and gradually reduce the tax. But he hasn't really provided a realistic plan for doing that.
And all of his budget proposal this year anyways counted on that income tax hike.
He's spending it all, and what he wanted in the budget is also to get some money from, like, selling the Thompson Center in Chicago, which has been part of each of his budgets, and it never happened. So we'll see where that goes. There are some magical numbers, but they're very different. And the governor, he says he's a strong business guy, and that if you get a graduated income tax, job creators will leave the state in droves, and we will collapse. Whereas Pritzker says a lot of states that have a progressive income tax do well, and, you know, people just want stability, because having another impasse where you're just butting heads with the legislature is not the way to give business a good feeling about staying or coming to Illinois. So very different philosophies.
Yeah,
that
and
are
I guess
at play.
You know, and like Bernie said, we have, you know, Governor Rauner has a track record of what he has done, what he hasn't done right for people, and J.B. Pritzker doesn't have that. You know, he will say, you know, one of his examples on how to tackle the fiscal issues and the money that the state needs is legalizing recreational marijuana, for example, but is he going to go about doing that? The progressive income tax as well, how is he going to go about doing that? It's going to take a few years to actually implement those changes and for the state to actually see or reap any of the benefits. But, I mean, yeah, it's still up in the air when it comes down to the governor's race.
Yeah, and reading some of the endorsements that came out from different newspapers around the state, whether they endorsed Pritzker or Rauner, a lot of the kind of reasoning or discussion around it was, despite XYZ, we think this person is the lesser of two evils. So it's kind of coming down to this. we're going to pick the least worst choice.
And we have to say, I mean, so the polls have showed J.B. Pritzker had like 15 to 22 points or so. On the other hand, a couple of bad things have occurred. There was a Inspector General's report that was leaked that was supposed to be private from Cook County that showed that J.B. Pritzker, they own one mansion where they had $25 million of work done, some by non-union subcontractors, which was one issue. But then they bought the mansion next door and they were renovating it and they tore out the toilets and there was some documentation that the Inspector General said found, and it even pointed the finger at J.B.'s wife that, you know, there was discussion, take out the toilets so it'll be unlivable so that we can get the assessment reduced so we can pay less taxes. Their tax bill did go down. They saved over a few years like $330,000. JB has continually said we didn't do anything wrong and there was a lot more going on in the mansion that made it unlivable besides the toilets being taken out. But, you know, Rauner has hit him on the toilet issue, and they ended up, to get rid of this distraction, just paid the money a few weeks ago and tried to get that behind him. But of course the governor says corruption, because he talks a lot about corruption and the Chicago machine, even though nobody's been charged with any wrongdoing, and he keeps calling Madigan corrupt, but he's been charged with no wrongdoing in all these years of the Tribune looking at every aspect of his business. And then there's the race question. Interestingly, the Chicago Tribune over the past year or so has been able to get some of the recorded conversations from the wiretaps of Governor Blagojevich, who, you know, went to prison and is still in prison, talking to J.B. Pritzker. Those parts of the tapes were sealed in court. Somehow the Tribune got access to them and put them out on their website and wrote about them. One of them was J.B. Pritzker discussing who would be the less obnoxious, offensive African-American to name to the U.S. Senate. He named Jesse White, as opposed to some other people, when Blagojevich could name someone to replace Barack Obama in the U.S. Senate. So J.B. Pritzker ended up apologizing, going to several black churches, saying, I didn't really mean to talk in a negative way about the black community. Then, just in the last week, we've seen 10 of his 200-member staff from across the state, 9 African-Americans, 1 Hispanic, file a lawsuit saying that we were mistreated, sent to the bad neighborhoods, not given reason for advancement, although most of these people have only been on the campaign for less than 6 months, but also had a press conference. And so there are these issues that keep coming up. Don't know if it's changing the way things are going. Rauner is hoping it changes the way things are going, but JB keeps hitting things like with the minute-long ad of the son of someone who is one of the 14 people, veterans or spouses of veterans, who died from Legionnaire's disease at the Quincy Veterans Home. And so this is a big issue, and J.B. Pritzker says that through the reporting of WBEZ in Chicago in particular, we learned that the Rauner people were waiting for the press to ask questions before letting people know for about a week as an outbreak was happening. And a lot of officials say or public health people say that's the wrong way to go. So fatal mismanagement is the way J.B. says that. So you've got all these conflicting things. And everybody's going to be really happy when 2 weeks are over.
Yes, we are. Cut out the ad. So if we go down just two names on the ballot, past those two, Daisy, there's a couple of third-party candidates running. What effect are they having on the race?
Well, right now, especially Governor Rauner, he has, you know, the tough job of getting the Republican base to really support him. There's a, you know, specific group in the Republican Party that's really unhappy with him that voted for Jeannie Imes back in the primaries. So he's been trying really hard to get those people back to him. And so I think that the third party candidates are kind of going into that and tapping into that unhappiness that these people have of Governor Rauner. So they might be taking votes again away from Rauner, maybe not enough to, you know, really impact the race, but enough that, you know, these are votes that Governor Rauner needs.
Yeah, just in the last day, there's a very conservative state rep from the suburbs named Alan Skillicorn, and he came out and endorsed Cash Jackson, the libertarian, who has had a bit of a problem paying his child support. But things happen, and Cash Jackson is the one who in a Chicago debate said, you know, you guys are spending hundreds of millions or whatever, tens of millions, and I spent $25,000. You know, who's the fiscally conservative one? So Skillicorn is for Cash. In central Illinois, State Senator Sam McCann from Macoupin County 2020, formed a conservative party. He's very interesting because he says he's the only true conservative in the race versus Bruce Rauner because of the reason Jeannie Ives ran. You know, Bruce Rauner was too nice in legislation he signed to abortion, which could be paid for by public funds under what he signed, and immigration, and issues like that. So Sam McCann says he's pro life solidly, and he's anti-immigration, and he's pro-President Trump when the governor won't even say President Trump's name for a long time during his tenure. And McCann has a bit of a history, which I'll try to say quickly, but McCann really was elected in the 2010 Tea Party surge, and he beat a DiMuzio, Deanna DiMuzio, very famous name, and the late Senator Vince DiMuzio's wife in that part of the state. And Vince DiMuzio had been chairman of the Democratic Party. I mean, he was a big deal. McCann won on conservative values, but then he really became, through the fact that there are so many public sector employees, state employees in his district, he became to understand or to believe that union workers were important, and he would vote the union's way. He claims, and he claimed in a speech recently, that when there was a bill that would allow arbitration to solve the impasse between the AFSCME union of 38,000 state employees and the Rauner administration, and there was some news on that today, but anyway, the appellate court apparently said the impasse shouldn't have been called. But Sam McCann said he voted for and was going to vote to override, and did, a bill that would allow that to go to arbitration. It ended up not passing. The governor was dead set against it, said it would be the worst piece of legislation ever. It would take away the power you gave me, voters, to deal with the union and save the state money. And then the governor put up a candidate against Sam McCann in the primary 2 years ago. Millions of dollars were spent through Dan Proff's PAC, Liberty Principles PAC. McCann won anyway, and he claimed in a speech that Governor Rauner had told him, if you vote for that, I'll destroy you and your family. And the governor denied that, and things like that happened. So McCann and the governor have this thing, and now McCann is probably just going to take some small percentage of conservative votes away from the governor, which could be the tipping point if the race is close.
Yeah, and as you said, he's gotten support from those unions McCann has gotten some support from those unions that he defended.
Well, and actually, he will tell you, it's basically one union.
Yes,
it's operating engineers. There's a local 150 in Countryside, and then they have a national group, and he's gotten, I think it's more, I know it's more than $1 million, and it might be in the twos or threes, but a lot less than the other candidates, but it's all operating engineers, and McCann will tell you, they give to Democrats and Republicans, and he actually pulled a stunt the other week, which was very interesting. There was a big, like, legislative night in Countryside. I think it was at the union headquarters, and McCann was there and went on live Facebook with his phone for 10 minutes, pointing out people like Jim Durkin, the Republican leader of the House, and other Republican legislators who were there to pick up their checks. And so people accuse me in ads of being Madigan's candidate when I get checks from this union, but they give to Democrats too. And truly, the union leadership, when Republicans do, the union leadership says that they have a lot of members who are Republicans and a lot who are Democrats, so they have endorsed both McCann and Pritzker. So it's weird, and clearly it's going to help Pritzker, but it is also true they give to both Republicans and Democrats.
All the money. That's all the...
Yeah, a lot of money.
So if we move down those four on the page of the rest of the statewide races, and Daisy, one of the more hotly contested one of these is the race for Attorney General. What can you tell us about that race?
Well, originally this wasn't really quote-unquote hot race until just recently. I mean, the Attorney General represents the state and state agencies, basically the chief law enforcement officer, and within the job, the Attorney General really has the opportunity for him, you know, to decide what issues he or she will really focus on. Current Attorney General Lisa Madigan has done a lot of work for college sex assault survivors and issues in that area. She has also been somewhat of a consumer watchdog for profit colleges that have misled students and student loans. So for this race, we have Kwame Raoul as a Democratic candidate and Erica Harrell, a Republican. Governor Rauner has really pushed for Erica Harrell. He really dotes on her. And Kwame Raoul has been tied to Mike Madigan, Michigan during the whole race. The big question for these candidates is, how involved are they going to get, or how involved will they be when it comes to taking part in lawsuits against the federal government? Current Attorney General Lisa Madigan has joined lawsuits with other attorneys general across the country. For example, for the Muslim travel ban, she was part of that, Illinois was. For the zero tolerance policy at the U.S.-Mexico border, Madigan has also led investigations, most recently investigating Illinois clergy involved in abuse. So yes, the big question is, will Erica Harold, she's very conservative and she's has conservative stand viewpoints, will she also be able to look past her personal views, political views, and just kind of follow if the federal government is overstepping its boundaries on certain human rights issues, for example. Kwame Raoul has said multiple times that, you know, he will speak for the people of Illinois, and if something is not right at the federal level, then he will speak out against that. And Harold has said the same thing, but it's still very unclear exactly where they will stand on that. Harold does not have any experience working in the legislature. Kwame Raoul has many years in the Senate, and that has been a point of criticism on both sides. Harold says that, you know, we need somebody, an attorney general, who's, you know, away, who has a fresh view on the state and who can lead the state with a fresh perspective. Some of the things that Erica Harold says that she will focus on as attorney general include anti-bullying initiatives as well as sexual harassment initiatives. So she has said that that will be her platform coming in. And for Kwame Raoul, he has said that he wants to focus on online sexual predators. And he has, even with his tenure in the legislature, he says that he wants to focus on gun restrictions and he has sponsored laws to curb the flow of illegal guns, but he says, and he has said it in the past, that, you know, gun laws are not really the way out of this gun issue that the state is facing.
Bernie, any issues that are jumping out at you in that race?
It's just kind of interesting where they come from and the stories they tell, because Kwame Raoul got to the legislature because he replaced Barack Obama when Obama went to the U.S. Senate. So he was in the legislature 14 years from the south side of Chicago. And he also is a cancer survivor because he had prostate cancer a few years ago. He is clear. I believe his father died of it. And he's also, his parents were Haitian immigrants. So he brings a lot of these life experiences to it. Whereas Erica Harold, interestingly, sometimes she talks about it, sometimes she doesn't, but she, her poise on camera comes part of the fact that she was Miss America in 2003, and, you know, talks about growing up in Champaign-Urbana, but then using the winnings from Miss America contest to go to Harvard, and she was a Harvard Law School graduate, so very accomplished in her own right. She also ran against Rodney Davis in a primary, was it a couple years ago or maybe 4 years ago, and I think she got about 40% of the vote. So that was her foray into electoral politics so far.
And didn't she, wasn't kind of anti-bullying and that sort of thing her part of her platform as well when she was Miss America? She talked a lot about that during her
year. It was, yes. And there was some abstinence, some anti-bullying, and I think anti-bullying became the key that year. I should, to the education question from before, I just remembered I should be fair to Rodney Davis. He does talk a lot about, I toured part of Lincoln Land Community College with him once. He talks a lot about job training and needing more money for job training and the great job community colleges do, especially because not everybody goes to four-year colleges. And I'm sure Betsy would say the same thing in the 13th, but they both, you know, and Rodney has talked about ways to get veterans jobs and things. So there, and a lot of job training. So they clearly both would say good things about education in all the colleges in their district.
Yes, yeah. So getting back to the statewide runs, the other three races we see are Democrat incumbents who are facing Republican and Libertarian challenges. In the comptroller's race, Susana Mendoza, she won 2 years ago. That was the kind of off-year election for that. after Judy Barb-Topinka passed away during her tenure, and Rauner appointed Leslie Munger to finish out, or to do the 2 years of that term, and then have the mid-year election, or the off-year election. Susana Mendoza won that, and Daisy, since Mendoza has won, what's kind of been her focus since then?
She has done a lot of work on transparency and how the state is spending money, how state agencies are spending their money. She has pushed for legislation so that agencies report how their spendings and how they pay their employees. A lot of that has been surrounded on transparency and making sure that we're managing our money accordingly.
Yeah, and she's really kind of been a public kind of foil to the Rauner administration kind of throughout the budget impasse and afterwards, kind of putting out periodic reports on, you know, just kind of how terrible the state's finances are. And her opponent, Darlene Singer, she's a former state representative from the suburbs, and she's talked a lot about kind of taking the politics out of that office, and I think that's kind of a reference to her, to Mendoza's kind of strong role in talking about her watchdog role and kind of calling out Rauner for his fiscal policies. And Singer's also, she's been critical of Mendoza for that. And she's also, I think she made a comment to one of the edit boards that she's going to serve, you know, all four years of the term. And that might be a reference to the fact that Susana Mendoza, who's from Chicago, some of her supporters have been collecting signatures for a potential mayoral bid. So as we know, Rahm Emanuel has decided not to run. So that's kind of kicked up a frenzy in Chicago and is now kind of creeping out to state politics as well. Bernie, what effect do you think that'll have, if any, on the race?
The mayoral thing?
Yeah.
None.
Yeah.
So far. I just, Darlene Singer has not proven to be a well-funded candidate at this point. I found it interesting at the state fair when the Republicans had the rally at the fairgrounds and the governor was on stage with Evelyn Sanguinetti, his lieutenant governor, and then he called over Erica Harold and they put up the hands in the victory kind of dance over there. Well, you've got Jim Dodge running for state treasurer and Darlene Singer running for comptroller. They're around there somewhere, but they're not on stage with him. And that was kind of is allegory the right word? It was just kind of an interesting illustration of where the Republican Party is. The governor's really hoping to get Erica Harold elected, and then there seems to be less of an emphasis on those other two offices because you have what would appear to be popular incumbents in Susana Mendoza, and then the treasurer, Mike Frerichs, who before I came here, I just saw his a new version of his I Am Tall ad that he used to win 4 years ago, where he was reaching things on the top shelf for his mom at his house. Yeah, because he is 6'8", so. And Susana Mendoza is about?
Maybe my height.
5'1", but she does play soccer, so she did use that in an ad that apparently ran only in Chicago, and some people saw in that a hint as she showed her soccer moves and how she, you know, got her high school to let her play with the boys, and then she ended up going to college on a scholarship, and, you know, she was all state in high school. I'm not sure if they ended up getting a girls team at her school, but the jersey she was wearing looked like the flag of the city of Chicago, so people were reading into that she might run for mayor. I don't think that affects her race against Singer in 2 weeks from now.
Yeah. And so you mentioned the treasurer's race against Michael Frerichs, who's the treasurer now, incumbent there. And one of the issues that's being discussed in that race is a debate about combining the comptroller with the treasurer. The comptroller, they kind of write the checks and kind of keep the checkbook for the state. The comptroller does that. And then the treasurer is the one that kind of manages investments, and they run a couple of college savings programs and things like that. There's been talk about how those positions in other states are actually combined, so we have one fewer elected office. Michael Frerichs has said, the state treasurer's office, it has its duties, and those should remain separate in order for them to do the best job. Whereas his Republican candidate has said, let's combine them and save the state some money. But as Bernie said, the incumbents are strong there.
Yeah. Well, I know Mendoza wants to keep them separate. Was Frerichs, does he want to keep them separate too?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the Republicans want to combine, and they held some joint press conferences on that.
Yes. And then the final one is the Secretary of State, Jesse White, who has said in the past that he's not going to run, but is running this year. He has a couple of challengers. Daisy, what are some of the issues in that?
And I think the main issue here, at least from his challengers, has to do with White's age. They're saying that he's just too old to be running, but Secretary of State White has said that nope, he's better. You know, he's in better shape than ever, and he's, you know, he has many, many years on the job. This would be, if he gets reelected, this would be his sixth term in office. So that goes into another issue of term limits. Do we also, you know, put those in place for people in office here, for statewide office, because he's been in office for almost 20 years. So I think that's the biggest issue.
And the Grundy County State's Attorney, Jason Helland, is the Republican candidate, and he's the one who's really made the age an issue early on. He was tweeting about that, you know, months ago, and then when he said it at Republican Day at the State Fair that morning, I did a story on it that day, you know, basically said he's too old. But again, Helland himself is, it just doesn't seem to be gathering a great head of steam. Jesse White took over the office from George Ryan, which was scandal-ridden at the time. One of the reasons was George Ryan's people, at least, would go around and demand or ask for campaign contributions from their employees. People got ahead by getting lots of donations, and obviously, you know, some of it ended rather tragically when some people apparently were taking bribes for licenses, and you know, this was a big story back then. So Jesse White came in. He doesn't take money from his own employees. He also made his name. He was a state representative for a long time, but talks about being a paratrooper and worked in a minor leaguer for the Cubs. But he also started the Jesse White Tumblers, basically inner city kids from Chicago doing you know, gymnastic shows now all
Summer
over the world.
Yeah.
There have been, I think it's thousands of kids through that. And as Sam Madonia, radio host on non-public radio in Springfield, will say, and who works for Jesse in his day job, people might complain even yet about what's going on at driver's license stations, which run more smoothly than they did in the past. But they always say, how's Jesse and how's the Tumblers? People just love the guy. He went from being a state representative to Cook County Recorder of Deeds, and then to Secretary of State. He is consistently a very popular vote getter, and so no matter what Jason Helland says about him, and there is Steve Duttner, the Libertarian, on the ballot, Jesse's looking good for 2 weeks from now.
Yeah, I mean, and historically, the Secretary of State has been like a stepping stone for higher office. I mean, your name is everywhere, name recognition, so if you wanted to advance into higher office, that would be the way to go.
Yeah, but
I don't think Jesse wants that right now.
Yeah. Might be one fewer opportunity there. Okay, so we'll pause again before we turn the page here for questions on the statewide offices.
What are the characteristics of a Libertarian Party, and what would the benefits be?
You know, libertarianism, and I pay less attention than I should, partly because they have not been a big factor in Illinois races in recent years, and because you have to get 5% to become an established party, and only Rich Whitney, who is a Green Party candidate from Southern Illinois a few years ago, got like 10 or 15%. I think it was 10% for governor, and then the Green Party became an established party for the next cycle, and then it faded away too. We have a very strong two-party system. We have a very, some people say, unfair system for third parties to get on the ballot, because, for example, a statewide candidate for governor of a third party that's not established, like the Democrats and Republicans, and for one cycle the Greens, needs 5,000 signatures. Third parties need 25,000, partly because they don't have to go through a primary, but also that is a big bar to other people getting on the ballot. Libertarians clearly believe in as little government as possible, as low taxes as possible. They don't believe in intrusion in a lot of ways, so they're not like a classic conservative, because on social issues, they don't want the government telling them what to do with their bodies, for example, whereas some Republican conservatives who are social conservatives may be anti-abortion. I think most libertarians would say they're much freer with use of drugs of your choice and medical procedures of your choice with low taxes and very little government interference. That's I hope I'm being fair to the libertarians in saying that.
Yeah, and just in looking at the Libertarian governor candidate, he's talked about, you know, reducing the size of government, as Bernie said, cutting a lot of government spending, and then also bringing up, you know, Illinois has 7,000 units of local government, so looking at trying to kind of shrink that number as well.
Yep. Of course, Governor Honor said that he would take 6 months to cut the number of government units in Illinois in half. But that was 4 years ago. And we have lost, I think, about three governmental units since then, one or two in DuPage County. So it's really hard to do because everybody has interlocking union contracts and provider contracts. And so when you talk about undoing all of the units of government we have, it's harder than it looks.
Yeah. And talking to Libertarian candidate for Attorney General Bubba Harsey, like Bernie said, if you know, I asked him, would you be willing, if you had to, get involved against the federal government in issues like abortion rights? And he said, yes, I would, because the government should not have a say in how a woman deals with her body, for example. So yes, less government involvement.
I got a question on it. Possible campaign issue that I haven't heard anything about from, and starting with the previous gubernatorial election. I don't want to get into the pros and cons of the issue, but have any of the candidates brought up in their campaigns to Bruce Rauner about him going against his campaign promise and issues on abortion? Now, I'm not getting into the pros and cons of that, but I'm just saying that's kind of died. He defied his base on an issue with that. And now I've heard nothing from these other candidates.
And I think that's one of the big issues that Governor Rauner has been dealing with like you said, losing the support from that very conservative base that ended up voting for Jeannie Ives. Jeannie Ives, actually, she's said that the reason why she joined this race for governor was because Governor Rauner signed legislation that would allow taxpayer money for abortion. And you know, a lot of people are very upset about that. And Governor Rauner, after the primaries, he came out and seeing how close that election was, said, oh, you know, I should have listened and I wasn't listening, but now I'm listening and now I'm paying attention. And I think that was his start in trying to get that very conservative base that was very upset after that piece of legislation was signed to try to get them back.
Yeah, and I'm not, there was a promise, but I'm not sure exactly of the timing of the campaign promise, because there is there's a very strong pro-choice group that gets involved in campaigns.
Not Emily's list, but
no, in Illinois. And the head of it used to be the head of student government at the U of I when I was there in 1976. But they released a survey when House Bill 40, the one that provided Medicaid-funded abortions, was signed by the governor or was being considered by the governor. And during the last campaign, he signed their survey. He even added some wording to say, I believe in a woman's right to choose. He now says to decide, because it sounds better, I guess, politically. I believe in a woman's right to decide, and I don't think that her economic status should matter. And so he said on that survey that had not been released publicly that he believed in legislation just like House Bill 40. Then during the budget impasse, apparently he told many Republicans, I will veto House Bill 40 if you stay with me on the budget and don't join the Democrats and pass a budget with a tax increase. Then through meetings or whatever, he changed his mind again, coming back to the original. He had actually put out a news release saying, I will veto House Bill 40. Then he changed his mind and signed it. Then he said, because this survey came out that he had signed in 2014 election campaign, I just stuck with what I believe, and that's what he said. But it has cost him dearly because, again, Jeannie Ives ran mostly, that was the catalyst that got her to jump into the race. And that is something that a lot of people feel betrayed upon. And Cardinal Supich in Chicago has said he feels betrayed too. Not exactly sure if the governor told him to his face, I will veto it. But clearly there was, and we actually asked Cardinal Supich about this when he was in Springfield for another issue. And he did say, well, you know, his office put out the press release saying he was going to veto it, and then he signed it. So it has turned off a lot of people. It has given people like Sam McCann the reason to say, he's not a true conservative, vote for me.
I have a question. It's mostly just rumors that I've heard, and I haven't really followed up with it. The driving tax or raising registration fees, has either candidate for governor followed up with that? Are they for it or against it?
So there's a couple of different ones. Motor fuel tax, raising the motor fuel tax, is that what you're... as a way to pay for infrastructure, Illinois is way, way, way behind on infrastructure maintenance, and there's been a lot of ideas or suggestions about how to do that. One of them has been, there's a motor fuel tax one, and then there's also the discussion of switching to a mileage tax.
A mileage tax, yeah.
And that's been one that State Senator John Cullerton has brought up as a way to boost funding for infrastructure, because as people have more fuel-efficient cars, the income from the motor fuel tax is going down, so we're getting less money to invest in our inner infrastructure. So that's been one idea, to switch it over to a mileage tax.
So what happened is at the Daily Herald editorial board meeting that got put on video, J.B. Pritzker was asked, how are you going to pay for infrastructure or whatever? And he talked about the problem of, you know, more fuel-efficient cars, and the gas tax hasn't been raised in whatever it is, 20 years in Illinois. So he said some, and I think he brought it up, some states are using a mileage fee where you either mark it on a log or you have some kind of a sensor in your car, like a GPS. He said, but that's something that some states are trying. I don't think, you know, maybe we should look at it. But he never proposed it formally. He said, maybe we should look at it and only on a trial basis. He said that on an editorial board. This, just like the governor, because Jeannie Ives said to the Tribune editorial board the name of Mike Madigan, she called him Mike Madigan's favorite Republican. This became, Pritzker is proposing a mileage tax in many ads run by Bruce Rauner. Then Pritzker had to deny it. I never proposed a mileage tax. He doesn't even say he brought it up. He did bring it up. He said maybe on a trial basis, but nothing has been proposed, and he has backed away from that at this point. So neither of them have been very specific about what to do, other than they both say possibly more gambling and possibly sale of marijuana on the Pritzker side. The governor does not like recreational use of marijuana. He has very slowly allowed more medicinal use of marijuana. Pritzker is kind of like all in on let's figure out how to sell marijuana, tax it, and get the money, and that would be part of our plan for roads. So the mileage tax would be difficult to impose at this point. It's something that he mentioned but didn't propose, and the governor made everybody think about it because he ran some millions of dollars of ads that Pritzker wants you to pay for driving your car in the country. So that's where that's at.
And I mean, it's interesting, like question, because, or how that kind of unfolded, because I think it speaks a little bit to what we were talking about earlier, where there aren't a lot of like concrete proposals going around or kind of the candidates really taking hard stances on how they would fund things like infrastructure or how they would fund things like schools or you know, handle the pension crisis. And so when there was something like the motor fuel tax and Pritzker said, oh, maybe I'd consider it, kind of everybody jumping on board and going, well, you know, this is a proposal, or this is, you know, so it's just to add to that.
Yeah, the political discourse where, you know, if a candidate offers details, the other one will jump and try to just rip them apart. Yeah.
Why can't we all just get along?
There you go. Anyway. Our next panel, why can't we all just get along? Any other questions on statewide?
I just want to know if any of the gubernatorial candidates had, or even some of the lower races, had said anything about possibly doing either state or national campaign finance reform, especially since we now have two extremely rich men running for governor, so it doesn't become a race to see who has the bigger checkbook.
I think in one of the debates, the gubernatorial debates, when asked about, I think the question was, are you embarrassed about the amount of money that you're spending in the race? I think J.B. Pritzker said, you know, I'm spending this and I'm investing in this campaign because I think, you know, this is what Illinois needs, or I'm invested in Illinois, that's how I look at it, but we should have campaign finance reform. Again, I don't think that there were many specifics, but...
Right. I think Rauner is more of the idea, you know, disclosure is good. I mean, Jim Edgar used to say the same thing, that even every time you try to stop campaign money spending over here, it squibs out over here. And I think we have found that certainly in the age of Citizens United, U.S. Supreme Court decision, and outside groups spending lavishly on these campaigns. Pritzker has said he wants campaign finance reform. We're not exactly sure what it looks like. He quotes Paul Simon, who also went for campaign finance reform when he was a U.S. senator and talked about it for his most of his whole career. But when Simon would spend a lot of money in a campaign and take campaign contributions that were large, he would say, you can't unilaterally disarm when the other person is spending so much. And that's what Pritzker says here. You know, Rauner is, and it's almost comical, but I don't know, that Governor Rauner, who spent like twice as much as anybody had ever spent on a governor's race with the $65 million 4 years ago, including $27 million of his own, and a lot of money to support other Republican candidates, is now accusing Pritzker, who is spending about three times that, of buying the election. So it's a very weird time. Pritzker says campaign finance reform. As someone who has watched four decades of Illinois politics, I don't think it's coming anytime soon, but people will talk about it because it sounds good.
We'll move over to the legislative races, the State House and State Senate. Again, if you don't know which district you're in, you can use that ilvotes2018.org. It'll pull up your whole ballot, and if you put in your address, and it'll tell you which of these lovely districts you'll be voting in.
Yeah, and we're going to turn it over to the races here to Mary. You've been kind of following some of these closely. So what makes these important, the contested races in both the Senate and the House?
Yeah, so of all these races, as you'll notice, there's only three out of these six that are actually contested that are seeing both Democrat and Republican candidates. In the 99th district, Representative Sarah Wojcicki-Jimenez's open seat, she decided not to run after last year, talked a little bit about kind of some of the vitriol and some of the hate that she's been getting. She was one of the ones that voted for the override the governor's veto of the budget last year, which, of course, increased income taxes, but also ended the budget impasse. So I think she got some criticism from that, but has decided not to run. So in that race, we have Mark Bell, who is an Illinois
state. He's a retired state police officer. Lives in Springfield now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He's a Democrat. And then Mike Murphy, who's a Republican, running on the Republican side, a small business owner. You guys might know him from such places as Charlie Parker's.
He's former owner of Charlie Parker's,
yes.
And all of his signs look like napkins or tablecloths. Yeah.
Very, very, very themed there. Bernie, I know you've been following this as well. What are some of the issues that are coming up in this race?
Well, it's kind of a Democratic-Republican split. Mike Murphy, for example, says he is opposed to a progressive income tax, and he's pro-life on abortion, and Mark Bell is for a progressive income tax and pro-choice on abortion. So that kind of tells you where they're at.
Yes.
It's also, you know, it's a... We'll see. There's a strong Republican Party. The Democrats are hopeful that with J.B. Pritzker's infusion of cash and enthusiasm that they'll have a better chance in a district like the 99th, but we'll see where it goes.
And then for the 96th district, we have an incumbent Democrat, Sue Scheer. She's from Decatur. And she's being challenged by Republican Herman Senor, who's a current alderman, I think, in Ward
2.
So again, kind of classic Democrat-Republican split there as well. I know Sue Scheer, she also voted for the budget last year. I think she originally voted against it,
right?
But then switched her vote after the governor vetoed it, saying, you know, I've kind of seen the pain that my constituents are going through because of this impasse, and so it's kind of worth...
Well, they also lost some Republicans, so they really needed the vote, and they
right.
put the pressure on her.
The Democrats
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
And then Daisy, jumping down to the state Senate race, the 48th, this is Seth McMillan versus incumbent Democrat Andy Menar. What's kind of at stake in this one?
Well, for this one, I mean, Andy Menar has had a track record, at least over the past 2 years, with his school funding reform. So I think, you know, he's popular with that, at least, and he's been campaigning on that, something that actually Governor Rauner takes credit for, although Andy Menar has been the one who kind of pushed this forward, obviously with the help of the General Assembly.
Yeah, and Seth MacMillan is says he's a very conservative Republican. He's pro life, and Menard, you know, had voted for civil unions. I think he was the southernmost legislator in the country to do so, or something, when he did it. So he's been progressive on some things. He was also the chief of staff to Senate President Cullerton before. So Seth MacMillan, who owns a landscaping business in Taylorville, has been saying Andy Menard represents Chicago, not you. And there's been a lot of anti-Chicago rhetoric there, but Menard has been running very nicely done ads and has spent it's more than $1 million already and is taking no chances, whereas MacMillan says, I'm the real conservative in this district. He's gotten a lot less funding, and he's kind of the Republican hope, but Andy Menard is kind of on the upswing, and MacMillan's even said to the local Republican Party in Sangamon County recently, you know, he wants to be something else, run for something else, or get appointed or something. I want to stop him. It's a difficult task.
Yeah, and a lot of that money for State Senator Andy Menard has been coming from Senate Democrats and from, you know, other.
Yeah, there's a group called like the Homeland Heartland
Democrats,
and Pritzker has given that like, I don't know if it's 750 at least 500,000 at one go, but that group has given Menard at least $800,000 all in all, and it is designed to elect downstate Democrats to the state Senate. So he's using that, but he's doing a lot of TV, and it would be, it seems like a lopsided race, but you never know on election day.
Exactly. Okay, so we kind of sped through those, but any questions on the legislative races?
So with the race with the governors, so the candidates always say, like, promises that they're going to have and they're going to do when they get in office or if they get in office. So how likely is it that their plans are actually going to be done and that the legislator will pass it?
So for some of it depends on the policy. I know we've talked already a lot about the graduated state income tax. That one in particular would be tough because it would take a change to the Constitution, and that would take the legislature approving the referendum to the ballot and then the voters approving it after that. So that one that has clearly has kind of an uphill battle. For things like marijuana legalization, I know there has been, you know, some talk about, at least in the legislature, that would be something, you know, that would bring in some additional revenue. There's a lot of questions about how it would be regulated and how it would be taxed and like that kind of thing. But with a Democratic legislature and a Democratic governor and J.B. Pritzker, who said he would support that, there's a little bit more chance of that.
I would just say sometimes things are easy. They took a few days and a lot of negotiations building up underground and a whole army of lobbyists to pass a bill that saved a couple of nuclear power plants and gave us our green energy, you know, tax credits for things, including nuclear power and wind power a couple years ago because the utilities really wanted it and they donate a lot and they provide a lot of jobs and a lot of people had interest in getting this done quickly and it got passed and signed by the governor all in a few days. Out of nowhere almost, whereas a lot of other things take forever. The governor promised, again, get rid of half of the governments in Illinois in 6 months, his 44-point turnaround agenda. He kind of didn't realize that he's a Republican, and a lot of his points were not good for unions, and Democrats not only get money from unions, but actually believe in them. And so he was trying to force it and gave a recent speech, you know, Rauner 2.0, I'm going to understand, work with people, and get incremental change. We'll see if that happens. Pritzker, like on something like marijuana, would have an easier time with a Democratic legislature if they're all the same party. You look at that as good or bad. Maybe they'll spend too much money and do too many things. Rauner wants to stop a lot of that and fight with them, but work with them. We'll see where it goes. But again, if they have conflicting philosophies, sometimes things just ground to a halt for 2 years.
And a great example, exactly like Bernie just said, you know, we were at an impasse for 2 years, and then all of a sudden this year, it's like, yes, let's work together. Let's make sure we put that behind us and we actually have a governor working with the legislature and making sure that we actually pass a budget by the deadline. So it just depends on how they are able to find ways to work together, compromise, even though they don't agree on certain specifics, but being able to like take some things out of a budget, for example, that they don't agree on, but hey, let's add this and we can take this out. it's all about compromise.
You mentioned the two-year budget impasse. Has that ever happened in state history?
I don't think in any state.
Any state.
I mean, I remember I got a T-shirt somewhere. I survived the session of 85, which was sold by a legislator, Judy Kaler's daughter. And that was 17 days over the end of the fiscal year. And the legislative session used to end right at the end of the fiscal year, June 30th. Now it's the end of May. They changed that at some point because Pate Phillip wanted to go hunting or something. But 17 days was a lot. There was one year, Rod Blagojevich, all the legislators really didn't like him, and they had an impasse one summer, and he kept calling him into special sessions, and they'd only meet for a minute. And Mike Madigan hated Rod Blagojevich and blocked everything he did, so Bruce Rauner is not alone in this. But that, by the time they went to the Democratic National Convention, I think this was 2004 in Boston, they passed the budget like a day before that started. So you're talking about the fiscal year started July 1st, so July and part of August. That's as long as it has ever been, I believe, in the last 40 years, and I think in the history of Illinois. This two-year thing, Governor Rauner, who kind of projected in a speech he gave in 2012 that maybe I can get the Democrats to choose between their union friends and social services, and what a tough negotiator he was, and he wasn't going to budge on some stuff. He didn't budge for 2 years, but that is really unprecedented, and that's why some of the legislators like Wojcicki Jimenez finally said, we got to join with the other side or else we're going to go into junk bond status and God knows what happens next.
And let me put it this way, Illinois is always competing with New Jersey on like the worst state with fiscal issues, with funding, with everything across the board. So we're always like 50-51. You know, like we're always kind of like
54.
Yeah. And I've talked to people from New Jersey legislators there, and they're like, yeah, you know, our issues, you know, Illinois and us, we're very similar, but at least we pass budgets on time. Like that's one thing that they're very proud of, that, you know, we are, you know, a really messy state as well, but we pass budgets on time.
At least we beat Illinois.
Yeah, and I will say, a year into this, I did an interview with Jim Edgar, who got fed up and said, I've been telling Rauner, you have to pass a budget. We're in worse shape than we've been in the 40 years I've been watching, he said at the time. And Governor Rauner just, he really hasn't talked to him in a few years that I'm aware of. He didn't want that particular advice. And of course, Rauner says it's the legislature. They could have passed any budget because they had a majority when I came into office. The thing is, they knew if they pass a tax increase without Republican support, he would just try to hang them with it politically. And so they didn't do that, and they would pass something, and then he would veto it. And again, the first year, the only thing he signed was K through 12 education part of that budget, so that the soccer moms in the suburbs and all over the state didn't get upset because their kids did go to school, but every other part of the budget had to wait. And a lot of damage came of that impasse.
Okay, so we've got about like 5 minutes left, so we're going to try to really quickly do the county races and the ballot questions, and then we'll all be on our way way more informed for Election Day, right? Okay, so county sheriff, this seat is open after Wes Barr decided not to seek re-election. It's for Sangamon County, so generally a pretty Republican county. It's Jack Campbell's a Republican. He spent, I think, almost his entire career in the sheriff's department.
Yeah, and he now works for the state overseeing the marijuana pilot project for overseeing marijuana that is grown for medical purposes.
Yes.
But he ran for sheriff last time, lost to Wes Barr in a primary. He was Neil Williamson's favorite at the time, but he's been out of office 4 years, and now, but he was under sheriff for Neil Williamson, so now he's happy to come back. The Republicans are happy to have him. The Democrats have put up Odie Carpenter, who does have 40 years in law enforcement, East St. Louis Department, and then he was chief of the Illinois Commerce Commission Police, which I believe has about 20 officers. Jack is a favorite here. And county treasurer, we have Joe Alio, who was longtime county clerk in Sangamon County, and then went to work for the state overseeing a Department of Public Health statistics office or something. He is decided to seek the seat being vacated for retirement by Tom Cavanaugh, the county treasurer. Alio has had an interesting career. At one point in the middle of his tenure, he kind of went to drug and alcohol, or at least alcohol rehab, and announced it, and it was kind of an odd situation. He got through that bad situation. He is popular in town. There's a young Democrat, 29 years old, named Thomas Raymond, who works for the Department of Revenue, who is a first-time candidate and is running as a Democrat for county treasurer. For better or worse, he's recovering. He just had some major abdominal surgery, but he's doing okay, so he hasn't been able to campaign as much as he wants. Elio's brother, Mike, also runs Troxel Insurance, so it's that kind of Springfield thing where the Republican Party's strength, certainly countywide, will probably carry through. The city can be half and half Democratic Republican. Mayor Langfelder is actually a conservative Democrat. Mayor Davlin was a Democrat. May he rest in peace. But the county, with the rural area included, is pretty Republican.
And the treasurer, Joe Elio, the candidate, he's got the endorsement of the previous.
Yeah, Kavanaugh is strongly for Elio, and the Republican Party is strongly for Elio for treasurer, and Jack Campbell for sheriff.
And so that actually ties in nicely to one of the first of the two ballot questions. Two things of note for the ballot questions. The first one, should Capital Township pursue a full merger with Sangamon County? The first word of that question is should, so that means that one is advisory. The second one, shall a retailer's occupation tax, that one is actually a binding referendum. So two differences there. So for the first one, Capital Township merging with Sangamon County, there's the debate here is basically between the city and the county. The city is saying because Capital Township is wholly within the city's boundaries that it should take it over, whereas a lot of the county officials will tell you they already are performing a lot of the duties. They have kind of dual responsibilities, including the county treasurer, which acts as the
supervisor and collector for the township. State law, we are a very unique township. Capital Township is the only township in the state, I think, that has no road commissioner, because the city takes care of the roads because it's the same territory. But our county, two of our county elected officials, the county clerk and the county treasurer, both also oversee the township. And the treasurer is the township supervisor and collector, and the clerk is the assessor and the clerk. It's very weird. But it would, even with this advisory referendum, if it passes, and it's really designed to head off, like, I think, a merger with the city if there is a consolidation or they get rid of some local governments. But it would still take state legislation to undo what's there now.
Exactly. And you might actually see, if you vote, which you should, in the April election, you might see a similar question that subs out with Sangamon County with the city of Springfield. A couple of city officials are kind of getting together to collect signatures right now to get that ballot referendum on the ballot for April. So again, that's just advisory for the state legislature to take into account when it decides where to consolidate that. And then the final one is basically a 1% increase in the sales tax in Sangamon County to fund building repairs for all the schools in Sangamon County, but it's being pushed by the Springfield District 186. I think with that 1% in Springfield, that would bring the total sales tax in most of the city to, I think, 9.75. That one's binding, so if we vote yes, then.
Yeah, except near Shields, because there's a special taxing district there that has an extra percentage on it, which is how they got Shields, and now they're building a hotel there, so there's a little worry that it's gonna be over 10% in that territory. I've seen school construction referendums come and go in Springfield in my time at the paper, which is 28 years, and I don't think any of them has passed because of the anti-tax sentiment. It has been real interesting this time. I think Jennifer Gill, the superintendent of District 186, has a lot of respect of the community. It's been a very low-key race. I've started to hear the committee that pushes this doing some radio advertising.
I saw yard signs the other day in my neighborhood.
And we'll see if the low-key, you know, you might not all know this is coming, but it's good for your kids and our schools, and that we really need it, is going to work better than more full-blown campaigns in the past that were not successful.
And actually, another interesting thing on this is the Chamber of Commerce has come out for it. They're supporting this tax increase. You know, not generally an entity that you would expect to support a tax increase, but a lot of what they're saying around this is, you know, to attract the kind of jobs and to attract residents and to keep them, we need good schools. So this, you know, part of having good schools is having nice buildings and good facilities for students to learn in. So that was kind of a part of the reason why they're supporting that.
And one really odd thing about Springfield is the city of Springfield itself, as it has expanded, the school district boundaries have necessarily changed. So a lot of Springfield residents, like in Panther Creek, they go to Chatham schools, and they go. Some people in Springfield go to Pleasant Plains, and some go to Rochester. And this has all been somewhat of a drain on District 186 and its schools, especially when somebody, a district like Chatham, builds this beautiful new high school. And then Springfield High, where my kids were fourth generation, my wife's fault, I'm from Evanston, but you know, is an older building that has had upgrades over the years, but needs more to get this done, to be attractive to people to move into the city. So it's a problem.
Any questions on those final county races or ballot questions? Yes, in the back.
So my first question is, who's controlling the money and how are they choosing to disperse it through all the school districts that are in Sangamon County? Because obviously it's not just District 186.
So I believe it's by enrollment.
Okay.
So kind of proportional by enrollment. And I know that there are some kind of rules or kind of process in place for what these different school districts can spend this money on. It's earmarked for specific spending on facilities.
Awesome. And then my second question is there a reason why they went full 1% and didn't do like an incremental type situation, or does anybody know?
I can only guess that they need enough money to like really do something.
Yeah.
And they're not going to get more than one shot for a while. So yeah. I suppose that was the thinking, and it's also easy to understand, but I don't know.
Okay. Thanks. Yeah, I think for those of you who are curious, I think it's $10.1 million that Springfield will get, and then like $625,000 for New Berlin, $875,000 for Pleasant Plains. If you go on the SJR's website, maybe Brendan did a story about it, where there's a kind of breakout box where it says exactly how much each of the school districts would get.
And as far as the non-binding capital township question, is there a financial incentive, or are we just going from 6997 to 6996 as far as units of government?
There is some question about how much of a financial incentive. Some people think there could be savings. It's not a lot, because the township already provides they provide about $1.5 million a year in a certain kind of assistance to people, like rent or food, and for people who have like fires or other family emergencies. There's a township office that provides this relief that's on 11th Street. There are about four or five people there, and you know, so there are a few township employees. There are a lot of assessing employees and collecting employees that already work for the county. So it's not going to be a giant savings, I don't think. There would probably be some, but I don't know a figure.
Yeah, and the city officials have said that if they take it over, they found like $500,000 worth of savings. I don't know where exactly that would come from. But then another kind of issue on top of this with money is that the township, I think, has like something like $2.5 million in reserves, which would then obviously get absorbed to whichever entity would take it over. So, yeah, it's always about the money, right?
I just moved here from a town that was proposing the 1% tax, and there was a lot of confusion because the people that had voted against the referendums thought this money would go towards salaries and benefits and things like that. So I hope the people that are pushing the 1% make it clear that it's for life safety, buildings, structures like that. And I believe it's Champaign County passed this, and all of a sudden their facilities changed within a year or two. They were building on changing and things like this. So I don't know a whole lot about Springfield school system other than Southeast School, where I have a family member that works there. And there are some upgrades that all of the buildings that I have seen need.
Yeah, and the school district has been going through kind of a facilities, I don't know if it, like, strategic plan is the right word, but kind of going through and assessing all the buildings and trying to figure it out. And their request for this, I think, has kind of come out of that, or at least kind of aligns. And I know the school district has said, you know, whether or not we get this tax increase, we will be doing some facilities upgrades. It's just kind of dependent on how much money we have to do that. And I know some of the talking points have been kind of instead of this would kind of prevent more property tax hikes because we would have this money earmarked.
Yeah, and the interviews that I've heard, like in just the local radio stations, they've really emphasized the buildings. I believe there are drawings of what their proposals are for the schools on a school district website, 186. So, you know, they are certainly pushing that to the extent that they're pushing the whole plan.
All right, I'll make it quick. It's along the same lines of education. And it has to do with hiring teachers and supplying the school with good teachers. Who has a plan that will support the teacher base and their financing of good teachers? Who can we count on for that?
Well, Senator Andy Menar proposed a bill, and I think carried the bill, to raise the minimum teacher salary to like $40,000, I think by 2024-ish or something like that, on a scale moving up. The governor rejected it, saying that he believes that local districts shouldn't have another mandate. Menar said that's terrible, and they passed, and they're going to try to override. I'm not sure they'll have enough to override, but in the fall after the election, when there will be a move in that direction. So that's just one way that they're trying to get more teachers. I know the governor has talked about, but I don't know the specifics at this point, of you know, teaching certificates to people using their real life experience to try to get some more teachers and specialties maybe into the pipeline quicker, but I'm...
Yeah. And I know, like, State Representative Sue Scheer, when asked what her priorities were, I think she mentioned solving the teacher shortage problem as being one of her priorities. I'm not sure where the governor, where J.B. Pritzker is on that, actually.
I believe he's for the 40,000. Yeah. You know, he's for that plan to raise the minimum pay to make sure people have an incentive and know Illinois is a good place to work and grow as a teacher.
I don't technically have a question, so I apologize if I have taken someone who does have a question, but the organization that is pushing for the vote yes for the Sangamon County referendum, the website is onesangamon.com. On that site does have what every school will be using facility funds for, as well as the state law as to how those are to be used. So for additional information, people can go there.
Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thank you. So it's one last quick question.
It's a little bit more lighthearted. Back, I guess, maybe to the governor candidates, it would be easier. As reporters, you see things that we don't, and off the record or observations. Runner's been reported to have, you know, a response when he gets a question that people don't always, or he doesn't always, you know, maybe want. And I didn't know if you've seen things from candidate Pritzker as well. And that's kind of that element of the non-robotic nature of campaigns that maybe you could share.
You say Ronner does what?
Well, I think you've given him a couple good ones that he will throw a chuckle out and maybe other reactions.
Oh, that he laughs first,
yeah,
when he says, yeah. Okay. you know, it's, let me just say, it's been frustrating to cover Governor Ronner in a sense, in that he is very, he sticks to his script, which means if he's going to take about 6 minutes of questions after an event, he sticks to 6 minutes. When his press secretary says one more question, they mean it. And when he's done, he walks away and will not answer a question as if you were not there. One time at Ace Sign Company, I yelled at him. I said, as a governor, should be able to take more than 6 minutes of questions. And he stood for another 4 minutes and took some questions. So that was good. Pritzker and Mark Maxwell of Channel 3 has caught Pritzker moving out the back door once in a while if there are particularly tough questions. So far, he has been more forthcoming and hanging around and answering questions. He is also good at not answering, for example, what the rates will be under his graduated income tax, because I think partly he knows that if he says a high rate for high earners, that the governor will say everybody's going to get taxed at, you know, 12%, and he's going to ruin the state. So he's been very careful not to say that. It has been frustrating for people. It has cost him some editorial endorsements, I think, that he won't be specific. But for example, on Democrat Day, at the hotel in the morning, the Crown Plaza, when all the Democrats met, and the way that, and Joe Biden was supposed to be there, and he couldn't because of laryngitis, but there was a press conference afterwards, and JB and Juliana Stratton came in and talked to like 15 reporters for 20 minutes. And I'm thinking, that's a lot of time, and we got to go write a story. He just stayed and answered almost everything, which is different. The governor, either the day before or after, on Republican Day at the state fair, as usual, rode up on his motorcycle, did the cheer, talked to the press about 5 minutes. And then went on to give his thing. And that's all the access you're going to get. So Pritzker so far is better at access, but we'll see what happens if he wins.
And for me, I mean, I've only been covering state government for about a year, so yes, I agree with all of your observations, but I have heard that in the past, governors have been so accessible, visiting the press rooms at the state house and giving them off the record details on like, oh, here is my budget address for tomorrow. Rita, do you guys have any questions that I can answer before this goes, you know, official tomorrow? Yeah. We don't get that anymore.
But I have to say, the Tribune, the AP, and social media ruined that system. It used to be you could do something, give a briefing on an evening, and have nobody report it until the embargo was broken at noon when the speech started. For then the Tribune, I don't know if it was Ray Long or somebody earlier, actually AP about 20 years ago, they didn't send anybody to the briefing so they could get it from a staff member so they could break the story on the side. And now there is no longer that kind of agreement. Social media also just wouldn't allow that anymore. So things have changed, and the 24-hour news cycle and the deadline every minute has probably strained the relationship with these folks, because they also know everything's on video now. We always have our phones up there, often taking pictures, and if they say something silly, somebody will use it against them. So it's a difficult job, and they are changing and progressing as we are.
Yeah, so both external factors and also personality-wise.
There is the personality thing, too, yeah. Sometimes, yes.
Awesome. So thank you guys so much for sticking it out with us and going through most of this. And thank you to Arlington Sport for hosting.
Hi, I'm Randy Eccles from NPR Illinois, and I want to thank you all very much for coming here tonight. As you just heard, I mean, it's hard enough as a voter to know what to do, but they have to spend all this time focusing on these campaigns. We can turn it off. They don't get to. So thank you very much for bringing us some information tonight to help us vote. We really appreciate it. I have to do my due diligence here and say that takes a lot of time and a lot of work, and your support is always appreciated. So NPR Illinois is supported by listeners and the audience, so you can go to nprillinois.org to find out more information about the voting, and if you'd like to make a donation, that's always welcome. Beyond that, I think what's really important, we've done a variety of forums across the state, and the biggest thing that came out when people would ask is, does it make a difference if you call your representatives and your politicians? And the politicians and the lobbyists and everybody said, yes, it makes a huge difference if you're active and call and contact them. Obviously, a handwritten letter is better than an email. An office visit is the best thing you can do. But if you care about something, going to one of the questions earlier, if you want to hold them accountable to do what they said, you've got to go and talk to them and make sure they know you're a voter who cares. And my assumption is, because everybody's here, you're going to be voting or have already. So thank you very much. We appreciate you coming out tonight. Thank you to also the people who you didn't see up here who helped put this together, Kristen and Bea and Mark and Mike. So thanks again. We greatly appreciate it. Take care.